Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 131 in this series entitled The Doctrine of Tzimtzum Part 4, God Knows, Therefore I Am. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the spring of 5761.
Good evening. Let's begin with a little story. As a preface to today's class, during which we will culminate, God willing, the 48th chapter of Tanya, which has been quite a chapter. You know that one of the Alter Rebbe's grandchildren was Rebbe Menachem Mendel of Lubavitch, known as the Rebbe de Tzemach Tzedek. After the passing of his mother, as a young woman, his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, raised him in his own home. And after the passing of his uncle, of his mother's brother, the son of the Alter Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, he was appointed as the third leader, as the third Nasi Rebbe of the Chabad dynasty. The Tzemach Tzedek had seven sons. His youngest son was Reb Shmuel, who later became the Rebbe Maharash, the fourth Rebbe in the Chabad dynasty. One of the striking differences between father and son was that the Tzemach Tzedek couldn't care less about the aesthetic look of his home, his wagon, his furniture, his garments, and so forth. The Rebbe Maharash behaved in a different fashion, in a very royal and aristocratic and wealthy way. Once, the Rebbe Maharash had to renovate his home, and he built new windows for his home, so he purchased very wide windows, which in that day, in that time, were considered to be quite modern. Once, when the Tzemach Tzedek visited his home, he sees the windows, so he turns to him and he says, "Was is das? What is this?" So he says, "Father, I wanted light in my home, so I purchased such type of windows." So characteristically, the Tzemach Tzedek responds and he says, "Bam Zeiden zayn nish gewen azalche fenster." Bam Zeiden, by my grandfather, by the Alter Rebbe, there were no such windows. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, perhaps it was dark in his home. The Rebbe Maharash tells the Tzemach Tzedek, perhaps it was dark in his home. So without skipping a heart's beat, he says, "Nein, nein. Bam Zeiden is given gar lichtig. By my Zayde, by my grandfather, the home was filled with light. In chapter 48 of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe reveals to us some of his vision on the world, namely that it's not such a dark place. Rather, it's gar lichtik. It's extremely luminescent, since the infinite energy and presence and light of Hashem envelop and fill and permeate and penetrate every single detail and nuance of existence, to the extent, as he put it, that there is no point, there is no crevice, physically or conceptually, that is not filled inside and outside, on every level and in every rank, every feature and every detail of it, that's not filled with the infinite presence of Hashem's light. And just as when a human being thinks about something, depicts a certain image in his or her mind, his imagination or his mind envelops every single detail of that item, of that article that he depicts in his imagination, all of its dimensions, properties, features, colors, shapes, every scratch and every dent is enveloped by the human imagination. So Hashem's knowledge or Hashem's energy envelop every single dimension and detail of existence. It's just that by the human being, it's only in his imagination. Concerning Hashem, the Alter Rebbe said, it's not just an imagination, it's actual, that the entire existence in actuality, in reality, not just an imagination, is enveloped and encompassed within Hashem's knowledge. Furthermore, the Alter Rebbe emphasized the creation, the Hishavos, the creation of every single thing from a state of nothingness and its emergence into a state of somethingness comes from Hashem knowing it. Hashem knows, therefore I am. Again, the metaphor of a human being. Just like in the world of a human being, a man can invent an entire universe in his imagination. We call it daydreaming. In your daydream, you can invent an entire world. You can invent human beings, locations, interactions, conversations, events, stories, episodes, whatever you wish. All of these existences, this entire world that you invented in your mind, what is the definition of its reality? The exclusive definition of its reality is that you're thinking about it. It has no identity outside of the fact that you're thinking about it. That's why if you cease to think about one of the characters for a moment, it ceases to exist. Why? What happened to it? And the obvious answer is, its entire happening, what made it happen was you were thinking about it. It doesn't have any other definition outside of the fact that you are thinking about it. That is its entire reality. It doesn't have an identity outside of your imagination. You're also not going to say that which dimensions of the thing are defined as the as part and parcel of the human imagination, the general dimensions of the object. Obviously not. Every single detail, every scratch in your daydream, every dent, what is the definition of that dent? What is the definition of that scratch on the nose that you invented in your daydream? It's not just the general item or the general human being. What is the definition of every scratch, of every crevice, of every the most minuscule and infinitesimal of details? The definition of its existence is that I'm thinking about it. So the Alter Rebbe says this is true in actuality about our universe. What is the definition of the most tiny creature? Every dent and every crevice in the physical, limited, defined world, what is its true definition and identity? The fact that Hashem knows it. any detail that is not enveloped by his thought doesn't exist, because the definition of its existence is that Hashem knows it. That is what makes it exist. That is what existence is. Hashem knowing it. We are, in other words, swallowed up or absorbed and encompassed in Hashem's knowledge. However, we all know very well that before learning chapter 48 of Tanya or other chapters in Tanya that convey a similar message, nobody would ever describe their identity in such terms. The identity that we ascribe to ourselves is not that. If you look in the mirror or someone asks you, who are you? Or you ask yourself, who am I? Our natural response is not, who am I? Hashem's energy. Who am I? I am I. So the Alter Rebbe says, what happened? So the Alter Rebbe explains, it's because our reality, as it exists within Hashem's knowledge and from the point of view of Hashem's knowledge, is not presently revealed in our consciousness. Our reality as it's experienced from Hashem's knowledge and energy is not felt within our identity. Our identity as being absorbed as part of Hashem knowing of us, and that's our definition, is inconspicuous within our consciousness. What is conspicuous within our identity is a condensed, a contracted, a condensed level of divine energy, which can tolerate and can welcome a perception of self, which is defined, which is limited, which is self-conscious, which can even be egocentric. And this condensed energy varies in each world and in each universe and in each creature, thus producing creatures with different levels of self-consciousness. From a soul in the higher paradise to an angel in the world of formation to an angelic being in the world of action, to a human being walking on the face of this earth, to the self-consciousness of a hippopotamus or a horse, to the consciousness of a rosebud or a grass, a piece of grass, or to a pebble in your backyard. Each has a different level of self-consciousness. The latter two don't even have a sense of self-consciousness in the ordinary understanding of the term. This was the point that we discussed last week, yes? That's a very lovely question. Is this connected to the famous idea of the Baal Shem Tov concerning Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence? Unlike other Jewish scholars throughout the generations who differed and did not believe that the divine providence extends to every leaf or every grazing animal or every speck of dust, versus the Baal Shem Tov who taught that the divine providence extends to everything, indeed it's very much connected to what Alter Rebbe explains here. Because the definition of that leaf's existence is Hashem knowing it. Yes, that's true.
You say God is the Rambam said that God is a perfect mind, you want to say.
No. So you're supporting what the Alter Rebbe says. This is a very interesting comment you made. You're saying that Maimonides writes, the Rambam writes, who is God? God is a perfect mind. This exact idea that you mentioned now is going to be the subject of discussion presently. Because Maimonides got a lot of flack for his statement. Okay, let's continue. So in other words, this is what the concealment accomplished that reality. From Hashem's point of view, is counterintuitive. One has to meditate and reflect and contemplate again and again and again to begin even understanding and appreciating the perspective the Alter Rebbe is addressing. But naturally, instinctively, it runs contrary to our intuition of self and our intuition of the world around us. And that's a direct product of the reality called Tzimtzum. We are on page 136. Still in the wide lines, the line beginning with the word V'tachlis, U'b'b'chines daimim v'tzameach b'lvad, we're standing at the word Achid Yossi Yisbarach. Still in the wide lines. It's five lines before the narrow lines. Ach. The Alter Rebbe said that from our perspective, from the perspective of the universe and the universes, we define ourselves as limited creatures, as limited beings, because of the fact that Hashem's knowledge and our existence as part of Hashem's knowledge is concealed. It's not manifest within our identity. So we experience ourselves as different types of creatures. We ascribe to our reality different definitions of existence. Zog da Alter Rebbe, however, here he now concludes the other way, the other side. Achid Yosa Yisbarach, however, Hashem's knowledge, which is united with his essence and being. And he explains, what does he mean that his knowledge is united with his essence? Ki hu hamad v'hu hayedeya v'hu hayedua. For he is the instrument of knowledge. He is the knower, and he is the known. And thus we can say that his knowledge is united with his essence and being, because he is the knowledge, the instrument of knowledge. He is the knower and he is the known. What does he mean? This quote is what you were referring to. This terminology is a term of the Rambam, of Maimonides, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon. The next few lines in Tanya will all be quotations of the Rambam. The Rambam says this in three places. In Hilchis Yisei, in Yad HaChazak, in his book of Mishneh Torah, he says it in Hilchis Yisei Di HaTorah in the second chapter, in Hilchis Tshuva, and not in the, these are two places in the Yad HaChazak, and he also explains it at the end of his famous Shmoina Prakim, his eight chapters, part of his commentary to Masechta Sanhedrin. Mishnayi Sanhedrin. In the Rambam's philosophical magnum opus, in his Meir Nevuchim, in his Guide for the Perplexed, in its first section in chapter 68, the Rambam elaborates with more length the concepts he treats briefly in the former three places. The Meir Nevuchim, the Rambam explains as follows. In a human being, there exists three dimensions. There is the man, the knower, the yodeya, a human being who has the potential to think, a soul that possesses the potential to think. Then there is the subject of knowledge man desires to know, which he calls the yadua. So we have the yodeya, the man, the knower, who has the potential to think, and the yadua, the subject of knowledge he desires to know. Finally, there is the mada. There is the means and the process of conceptualization, which we might call the faculty of knowledge, the brain, the mind. That's the mada. These are the means and the actual process, the active process of conceptualization through the mind. Thank you. When man conceives a concept, the Alter Rambam says, these three are joined. The knower, using his mind to conceptualize, integrates a certain subject. So the idea, the knower who has the potential to think, actively engages his mind and conceptualizes, which is Mada, Eyadu, and the three join at that moment. Nonetheless, essentially, the Rambam says they exist as separate entities. Concerning Hashem, the Rambam says, there are two major problems. One problem he discusses already in the Yad HaChazak and Hilchis Yisoidei HaTorah. Another problem he discusses in the Meir Nevuch. The first problem with this model is, and these are the typical issues that philosophy and Jewish philosophy struggled with, the first problem is multiplicity or fragmentation. If Hashem is truly one, he's unfragmented, he's not a composite of components, he's unity par excellence, as the Rambam emphasizes again and again, this model would not work. Because this would mean that he's made up, so to speak, of various components and elements.
By him it is, but enclosed by clapping us, we perceive it as separation. But by him it is not.
One second. But if we are to understand the model of Hashem's knowledge and compare it to our model, this is one major problem. The Rambam puts it, if so, you wouldn't have one God, you would have three gods. Right. Very well. Thank you. The second problem is, this would introduce the element of change. Tomorrow I will discover new ideas that I haven't known today. None of us are the same today as we have been 10 years ago. Besides the fact that we have experienced so many more things, our knowledge has changed drastically. So the Rambam presents to us a new model. He says Hashem knows the world. He knows it intricately, but he knows it in a different way. To put it in the words of the Rambam, it's important to quote the Rambam to appreciate what the Alter Rebbe will do here. The Rambam again in Hilchis Yisoidei HaTorah in the second chapter says, all the existences, Mitzura Rishoina Ad Yitush Katan B'Kadr Haaretz, from the highest form, the highest spiritual form, till a tiny mosquito in the depth of the planet Earth, in the depth of our ball, all has come into existence Mikoyach Amitasi, from the influence of Hashem's truth. And since, the Rambam says, Hu Yoideya Atzma Yumakir Gdulase Visifarte Vamitase, since Hashem knows himself and he recognizes his greatness and his splendor and his truth, automatically Hu Yoideya Hakol, he knows everything, Vein Dover Nelam Imenu, and there's nothing concealed of him because everything came from him. And the Rambam continues that Hashem knows himself and he knows his truth as is. And he and the subject that he knows are one. He knows himself. And the he and the process of conceptualization are one. Nimtzis ata oimer, the result of what we're saying is, hu ayodeya, v'hu ayodua, v'hu adeya atzma hakol echad. He is the knower. He is that which is known, and he is the knowledge. He is the process of conceptualization, it's all one. He knows the world by knowing himself. And he and his knowledge of himself are one. So this eliminated the problem of multiplicity, it eliminated the problem of change, because he doesn't know the world from the world, And therefore, he has to read the New York Times, and every day the front page of the New York Times changes. So every day his knowledge changes, like we know, his knowledge, his mind changes. He knows the news from himself.
He makes the news.
Yeah. That's what the Rambam says, because he makes the news.
So
therefore, there's no change. He doesn't know today what he did not know yesterday, and there's no problem of multiplicity as well. Because the subject of knowledge is not detached. It's not a third component that comes into his life. It eliminates the two problems. Now let's see it in the Alter Rebbe's words. Zog the Alter Rebbe, ki hu amadev, hu ayedev, hu ayedua. You could put it in other words, according to the Rambam, the definition he gives to Hashem is perfect knowledge. Intelligence par excellence. He is the knowledge, the process of conception, the means in the process of conceptualization. He is the knower and he is the known. How can you say that he is the knower and he is the known? The known is the known, it's not he. Because by knowing himself, he knows all created beings. And he and his knowledge are one. He and his knowing are one. And by knowing himself, that's how he knows all the created beings. So he, the knower and the known are one. Because he is one with his process of conceptualization and knowledge of himself. That is one with he. In other words, the definition of he is that he knows himself, intelligence. And he knows the world by knowing himself. So the knower, the known, and the knowledge are one. And the Alter Rebbe continues, V'loi b'yidiyah shechutz memenu ki yidiyah sod. He doesn't know created beings with a knowledge that is external to himself, like the knowledge of a human being. Human knowledge requires getting to know something which is external to the knower himself. He gets to know events, ideas, entities that are external to himself. Not so Hashem's knowledge, it comes from his knowing himself. Why? Ki kulam nimsayim amitasa yisbarach. For all of the created beings are derived from his true reality. Since they are all derived from his truth, therefore by knowing himself he knows everything. And I have it dovers and this concept ain bi chaylus ha'odem la sigi al buryoy v'chuli. It's not within the power of a human being to comprehend clearly. We exist in the context of an environment separated from ourselves. Even the powers granted to us exist before we came into being. So although man, through his knowledge, can conceive other entities, the unity could never be complete, like mentioned above. By Hashem, the existence of all beings is not apart from him. He doesn't exist, so to speak, in the context of an environment outside of him. So when he knows them, he does not know a separate entity. Again, to quote the words of the Rambam in the same place, the Rambam says, "Einoi makir abruyim v'yoido machmas abruyim." He doesn't recognize the creatures and know them from their existence, like we know them. Ela machmas atzma yedam. He knows them because of him knowing himself. Mipneishu yedeya atzma hu yedeya hakel. Since he knows himself, he knows them all. Shahakel nismach loy bahaviyasei. Because all is dependent upon him for its existence. To use perhaps again the model the Alter Rebbe employed before, although the Rambam does not employ this model. Hashem knows existence like you know the creatures that you invent in your daydream. In fact, the entire definition of the existence of these creatures is the fact that you know them. They don't have any other existence. You don't have to go ask somebody else to teach you or explain to you the realities that you conceived in your daydream. Not just because these realities are dependent upon your daydream. The entire definition of their existence is the fact that you're thinking about them. So the same is true about the entire world, that the truth of their reality is only within the reality of godliness. So you'll ask a question, does he know them? Does he recognize them? What do you want him to recognize? You want him to recognize their existence. The very definition of their existence is that he knows them, that he's thinking about them. So you'll ask a question. Do you know about those realities that were created in your daydream? Tell me, do you know about them? If I ask you such a question, how will you respond? What do you want I should know about? Their existence, the definition of their existence is that I know about them. It's just that, again, the metaphor is extremely incomplete. The Rambam does say that a person cannot really understand this for many reasons. What we depict in our mind is never a material reality, it's only a mental image. It's also not something from nothing. All of our mental creations are culled from previous experiences and data that we combine together to form a reality in our mind, but it's not really something from nothing. So the metaphor is quite incomplete on various counts. But it just gives us some idea of what this means. So the Alter Rebbe is saying that this knowledge of Hashem is united with His essence and being according to this idea in the Rambam. Now let's look at the footnote. The footnote on the side in the small words, letters, Haggah. As usual in the footnotes in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe comes to explain a certain concept, but it's not intrinsic to the sequence or to the flow of the actual structure of the chapter. What I have just written, its source is the Rambam, as the Rambam has written, as Maimonides has written, as I mentioned before, in a few places, in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, in Hilchos Teshuva, in Shmei Neprakim, and in the Meir Nevuch. But the Rambam, Alter Rebbe, adds, the scholars, the sages of the Kabbalah, have agreed with the Rambam, have agreed with his views. Now this line is very telling. It's very telling of the Alter Rebbe and his perspective and his philosophy of Chassidus Chabad, that although the Rambam and the teachings of Kabbalah constitute two distinct universes, which at first glance are continuously at odds with each other on so many different counts, the Alter Rebbe continuously attempts to integrate the two. In the Alter Rebbe's unequivocal faith that philosophy and Kabbalah, Jewish philosophy and Kabbalah, were both components of the same Torah, which is Torah Semes, which is a Torah of truth, the Alter Rebbe successfully, I think you can say, integrated and systemized the Weltanschauung, the world perspective of the Rambam, and the world perspective of the Arizal, of Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, all of the great Kabbalists in Jewish history. So the Alter Rebbe says, V'iskimui moichach mehakabbalah, the sages of Kabbalah agreed with him. And this is not an easy statement to make, because this idea of the Rambam evoked much debate among various scholars and sages. Most notably, in this context, it would be worthwhile to mention the Maharal of Prague. The Maharal of Prague, Rabbi Yehuda Leva of Prague, known to many as the inventor of the Goylam, in addition to that, the Maharal was an extraordinary scholar who authored numerous volumes on Jewish thought that are very profound. One of his books is called Gvurais Hashem, The Strength of God, where he discusses the exodus of Egypt. That's the book is dedicated to Geulas Mitzrayim. The book has three introductions. The second introduction, he criticizes sharply one of the great Jewish philosophers who's known as the Ralbag. Ralbag was Rabbeinu Levi, Reb Levi ben Gershon. He lived in France. He was a doctor, he was an architect, an engineer, a physicist, an astronomer, a philosopher. He's known to us with his great commentary on the Tanakh, on the Nevi'im. He wrote a book on Jewish philosophy called Melchamos Hashem. And he discusses there at length the concept of miracles. Again, one of the big problems the philosophers had with miracles is Hashem changed his mind. And therefore they wanted to say all the miracles were pre-programmed into the chemistry of creation. And the Maharal discusses in great length why the Ralbag is wrong in his perception of miracles. In discussing this, he gets to this issue of how we are to define Hashem's intelligence. And he quotes the Rambam, not in his name, and he says that there are two major problems. Because according to this conception of Hashem's knowledge, Hashem could only know the news in the New York Times that stems from Him. But what about those things that happen in the world that don't stem from His truth? That He doesn't know about. If His entire source of knowledge is Him knowing Himself, so that in the world which comes from His truth, which is dependent upon Him, that He knows. But that in the world which is not dependent upon Him, He doesn't know. So when a man decides to eat a cheeseburger, that event didn't come from Hashem. That came from, it's a sin. So that he wouldn't know about. That's one problem the Maharal has. A second problem the Maharal of Prague raises is, according to the Rambam, it comes out that Hashem has a definition. And the definition of Hashem is intelligence. That's what His being constitutes. That's the definition of His being, intelligence. Perfect intelligence. If He knows Himself, and this knowledge through which He knows Himself is one with Him, what is Hashem? Intelligence. And the Maharal found that an impossible notion to entertain. As he puts it, our sages never called Hashem HaSeichel Baruch Hu. They called Him HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They should have HaSeichel Baruch Hu. Intelligence, blessed be He. They call Him HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the aloof one, the holy one, the transcendental one. Maharal says Hashem created intelligence as He created a stone. Hashem knows just like Hashem does. Intelligence is a stuff that He created. Just like He can employ a stone with which to break a glass window, He employs knowledge. He creates knowledge through which to know the world. It has nothing to do with who He is. And the same is true with will and love and kindness and all of the other attributes and faculties. They are all creations. Now the Tosfos Yom Tov, Reb Yom Tov Lipman Halevi Heller, who was a student of the Maharal of Prague and wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos, on Mishnayos. He wrote a commentary on Mishnayos. In his commentary on Pirkei Avos, in the fifth chapter where the miracles are discussed, he discusses this Maharal. And he writes here on this piece that Nismach Bazal Chachmas HaKabbalah. This concept, this critique or criticism of the Maharal and the Rambam and his thesis of the definition of Hashem's knowledge, he relied upon or he called from the wisdom of the Kabbalah. So Chassidus Chabad explains, it's a Tzemach Tzedek in his book Derech Mitzvah Secha, Tosfos Yom Tov is referring to the concept of the 10 Sfirois. the 10 characteristics that the Kabbalah discusses at length. The 10 spheres are not an invention of the Kabbalah. You find them in other places as well, but they're discussed in the Kabbalah at length. They form the cornerstone of Kabbalistic literature. The Tzemach Tzedek says that Tosfos Yom Tov understands that the Maharal meant that the spheres are activities. Hashem created stones, and He created animals, and He created knowledge, and He created kindness, and He created understanding, and so on and so forth. The Maharal was born just for the sake of I always like to put things in the framework of history to get an appreciation of how these ideas develop. The Maharal was born in the year 1512, or others say 1520 or 1526. Now, the Ramak, Reb Moshe Cordovero, the author of the Paradis, passed away 1570. The Arizal passed away 1572, Shin Lamed and Shin Lamed Beis. The Maharal passed away in Shin Samach Tes, 1609, which means a few decades after the passing of the Ramak and the Arizal. The Maharal lived at the age of 97.
Wow.
Unusual for then, certainly compared with the lifespan of the Ramak and the Arizal, who died in the 40s or in the 30s, as I discussed in previous weeks. The Maharal passed away on the day of Chai Elul. The Alter Rebbe was a seventh generation, son after son, from the Maharal. The Maharal traced his lineage to David HaMelech. He had a family tree to David HaMelech, and the Alter Rebbe was a seventh generation of him, and he passed away on Chai Elul. He lived in Prague, and he discusses this, as mentioned, in Gvuris Hashem. Zogda Alter Rebbe, despite the Maharal statements, Iskimu imay chachmei haKabbalah. The sages of Kabbalah agreed with the Rambam. K'may shekasuv b'pardes l'aramak meharamakzal. As it's written in the Pardes, in the Orchard of Pomegranates, in the monumental Kabbalistic work of Rabbi Moshe Cordovero of blessed memory, and furthermore, v'cheinu l'fi Kabbalas Arizal. This is also in accord with the Kabbalah of our master, the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. Which means that to say that the Arizal would agree with the Rambam is even more difficult to entertain than to say that the Ramak would agree with the Rambam. That's what Alter Rebbe is saying. V'cheinu l'fi Kabbalas Arizal. And this is possible because of various reasons, which I don't want to get into at the moment. I'll just mention one. Since the Arizal is the one who revealed the doctrine of the Tzimtzum, it would mean that to define Hashem and identify His essence with the spheroids would be far more incomprehensible even than according to the Ramak. But Alter Rebbe says this is according to the Kabbalah's Arizal. But not because they negate or reject the Maharal's ideas. No. They're according to Kabbalah, a reconciliation can be created. Beside that symptom, the Islapshus Eiris Bekele. Following understanding the mystery, the secret of the doctrine of Tzimtzum, of contraction or condensation, and the process of the manifestation of the divine lights within the vessels, Kemoshakos of Leil Perik Beis, has been explained previously in chapter 2 with Alter Rebbe, mentioned the same Rambam, and in the footnote discussed the same concept a little more at length, which we discussed also more at length in chapter 2 of the Tanya. There he also says Islapshus. No, he says Tzimtzumim there. You want to know the differences between the two footnotes. One difference I see there, he says Vahoidu, here he says Vahiskimu. I mean, here he says Atzimtzum Vahislapshus, and there he says beside Islapshus Aide Tzimtzumim.
I don't know.
It's obviously in chapter 2, it's a more lengthy treatment. But he wants to know why there, Vahaydu and Hevi Skimu. I don't know.
Since he already mentioned it, it stands to reason, at least he'd give it a shorter treatment later on, just to remind him.
That's obvious why he gives it a shorter treatment, because it's the second time he's mentioning it.
Right.
But it is interesting that he's discussing two concepts in these two chapters. In chapter 2, he's discussing the soul of the Jew. He's not discussing Hashem's attribute of knowledge. He's discussing the soul of a Jew, something else. He's not discussing the spheres in chapter 2. In here, he's discussing the spheres themselves. And I believe that's the reason for the differences. In here in chapter 40, in chapter 2, he's discussing the soul of the Jew that comes from Hashem's Chachma, and Hashem and his Chachma are one, and therefore you can say the soul is a chelek alakam im al mamar, the soul is truly a part of Hashem. Here in chapter 48, he's discussing Hashem's knowledge. What is Dr. Rebbe saying here? Very briefly, as a result of the tzimtzum, of the process of condensation or contractions that occurred within the infinite light of Hashem, within the infinite light in the presence of Hashem, Hashem's light condensed itself and manifested itself within these 10 characteristics. This is called Islapshus Ha'oiris B'Kelim, the enclothement or manifestation of the infinite lights within vessels. What does it mean within vessels? You're not dealing with a physical manifestation. It means the process in which the infinite light assumes 10 characteristics, 10 properties. Chachma, Bina, conception, comprehension, attraction, rejection, integration, victory, whatever, all of the spheres. So the Alter Rebbe says, in the post-Tzimtzum reality, as a result of the reality, as a result of the Tzimtzum, you can say the light of Hashem, the infinite light of Hashem, becomes one with this characteristic. The light assumes this property. To say completely what the Maharal says, that wisdom, intelligence, or the other attributes are mere created beings, and Hashem employs them as he would employ a stone, that the Alter Rebbe says no. The Mekubalim agreed with the Rambam that knowledge can be attributed to Hashem himself. Aye, what about the Maharal's criticism? He says the Maharal is right when you're dealing with the pre-tzimtzum state of the light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not HaSeichel Baruch Hu. Any characteristic or definition attributed to it would be completely erroneous. But in the post-tzimtzum existence, you can say then, Hu Amad V'Hu HaYedeya, that he and the process of conceptualization are actually one.
You're saying then that Alter Rebbe is saying that intellect is an essential feature of Hashem, it is not...
In other words, after the Tzimtzum, you can say that intellect is an essential feature of Hashem's light. Like the other spheres, like the other 10 spheres.
But maybe the Maharal is talking only about pre-Tzimtzum reality.
True.
But the Maharal is only talking about pre-Tzimtzum reality. How is Alter Rebbe saying differently than the Maharal?
You want to know if the Maharal himself would write this reconciliation? Obviously not, because he criticizes the Rambam's view. But Chassidus doesn't come and say this one is right, this one is wrong. They are both right in a different context.
Like Newtonian physics and quantum mechanics.
You want to say like Newtonian physics versus Einsteinian physics versus quantum mechanics. Yeah. Now to come and say that Einstein, Newton, and quantum mechanics were all talking about the same reality would be... would be foolish. It would be nonsense.
In the respective realms are all true descriptions.
But in their own respective realms, they're all true descriptions. Right. But the Alter Rebbe's synthesis process goes even deeper than that. The Alter Rebbe's synthesis process comes and says that all these various models ultimately evolve from the same truth. They don't just exist within relative realities. You can, that's why it's much deeper than what you're saying about the combination of various concepts in physics. They don't only exist within their relative concepts. They all exist in ultimate truth because they are all an expression of one truth. And to say that is a big chiddush, and that was one of the Alter Rebbe's big contributions in his perspective, in his philosophy.
Because he's saying now that that's what the Rambam meant. He's not saying that.
Right. Why do I say the Maharal wouldn't say the same thing? Not only because he criticizes it. He said the Rambam wasn't saying this. The Rambam, the Alter Rebbe says, you have to appreciate the entire picture and you'll see where the Rambam's words fit in accurately. And the Maharal's perspective fits in accurately. But how do I know? There's another reason I say the Maharal wouldn't say that. Because the Tosfos Yom Tov says he relied on Kabbalah. And the Alter Rebbe himself here is quoting Kabbalah to embrace the Rambam. And I tell you, Tzemach Tzedek explains, what does he mean about Kabbalah? He means the concept of the Asa Sfiris. So really, this goes back to another major argument in Kabbalah about the 10 Sfiris, which is not our present discussion. I'll just mention it in this context. There is a major debate among the Kabbalists about the definition of the Sfiris. The four chief characters in this debate are Rabbi Menachem Rikanti, the Ma'areches HaElikus, which is one of the earliest Kabbalistic texts authored through one of the Baalei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Peretz, a book called Ma'areches HaElikus, and there's Rabbeinu Menachem Rikanti, also a great Kabbalist, the Pardes and the Arizal again. The Rikanti believed that all of the spheres are to be applied only to the vessels, never to the lights. Every sphere in Kabbalah is a combination of light and vessel. Light is the energy, and vessel is its limitations and parameters. So the Rikanti said, all characteristics are to be applied exclusively to the vessels. The vessels don't only limit the light. The vessels, when Kabbalah uses the word vessels, the vessels are what define character. The lights themselves are undefined. Essentially, this is what the Maharal is saying. The spheres are created beings. The Ma'areches HaElikus believe, no, the lights themselves can be defined as Chachma, Bina, Chesed, Gvura, Teferis. The Ramak and the Arizal reconciled these two perspectives in Kabbalah by saying the lights themselves cannot be defined by Chachma and Bina and Chesed. But when the lights become manifested in the vessels redefine the lights within this context as well. Now this seems it's not just an argument; it's semantics. These four, and between the Ramak and the Arizal, there's also a difference how much the lights are affected. So it's really a four-way argument. But this argument has very, very deep implications. One of the implications I'll discuss in a moment. There's a big argument if the Rambam learned Kabbalah. That's a good question. There's a big argument among our scholars. Some people say he did not. Others say that towards the end of his life, the Rambam mastered Kabbalah. But this discussion is irrelevant of it. Because the Rambam is perceived by the Alter Rebbe as truth. Every word of his. Every word of the Meir Nevuchim is truth. Not just from a relative point of view. So This is what the footnote is saying, in other words. If the Maharal holds like the Rikanti, and the Rambam would be reflected in Kabbalah in the opinion of the Maareches, the Pardes and the Ramak reconcile the two views by saying that as a result of the Tzimtzum, the Ur becomes one with the Keli. The Ur assumes the identity of the Keli. So you can say, Hu Amadav, Hu Ayedeya, and therefore Hu Ayedua. The Hu becomes one with the Mada. The Yedeya becomes one with the Mada. Intelligence is his essential feature. How the Tzimtzum did this is a long discussion in the Alter Rebbe's discourses and in the discourses of Chabad Chassidus. But this is the point. Why is this relevant to here? What the Alter Rebbe is talking about is existence of reality in terms of Hashem knowing about them. Hashem's knowledge is united with him, is united with his light. Post-Tzimtzum, as he explained it in the footnote, but it's united with him. And therefore, Hare Yediyazu, this knowledge of existence, Me'achar Shehibchinas Ein Soif, since it is of an infinite order, because it's one with him, it's one with his light, he goes now back to the discussion throughout the chapter. This knowledge cannot be described as clothing itself, as manifesting itself in the orb of the earth. Because the earth is finite and limited, while Hashem's knowledge is limitless. Rather, we have to define it in terms of encircling and encompassing the earth. Hislapshus, the word hislapshus, enclothement, manifestation, for the Alter Rebbe doesn't mean presence. It means revelation, expression. In the consciousness of our world, the knowledge of Hashem, which is the energy that brings it into being, cannot be manifestly projected and experienced in a revealed fashion within the consciousness of the world, because this knowledge is infinite. So if this would be felt in the world, what do I mean it would be felt in the world? We would experience our reality as what? As Hashem knowing us, that is our reality. What would be our identity? If this knowledge is infinite, there can't be anything outside of infinity. Infinity doesn't stop somewhere. So what would be the definition of our identity? We would experience ourselves as part and parcel, or rather as an expression of Hashem's infinity. I don't want to say part and parcel, because part and parcel doesn't work with infinity. But we would experience ourselves as an expression of Hashem's infinity. Infinity. That's not the product Hashem wanted. So therefore we say this knowledge, although it envelops every dent, every scratch, Soif of Kalalman doesn't mean it encircles the world in a spatial terms, even conceptually. It means it permeates and envelops every dent, but nonetheless it's not experienced within the dent or within the creatures. So we say it's makefes v'seveves, it's encircling it. Here we see that what Alter Rebbe terms Seivav Kalalman is even the knowledge of post-Tzimtzum. This chapter ascribes the term Seivav Kalalman not just to the infinite energy of Hashem of the pre-Tzimtzum that we discussed in previous weeks. We see from here that the Rebbe is talking about even the knowledge of the world of Atzilus. And that's why in the beginning of the chapter, he went till the world of Bria. He went till the world of Bria in discussing the fact that they only conceive the limited light. Because here, even the spheres of Atzilus are defined as Seivav Kalalman. It's just important to make note of it. Because after the Tzimtzum, even the energy of Atzilus is called infinite. And if it would be present within the world it creates, we could never be who we are within our own consciousness. Therefore, it must conceal itself. And what's felt within the world is an energy that is not infinite, and it can tolerate our self-consciousness or different forms of self-identity within the various worlds. So the Alter Rebbe says, but that's only from our perspective. although in truth, this knowledge, kailelis, embraces kol avya, its entire thickness, v'taychay, and its interior, its inside, but poyel mamish, in actuality, not just in imagination. Thereby, through this knowledge, it gives it existence and creates it ex nihilo, from something to something. As is explained elsewhere, that creation ex nihilo can take place only as a result of this light, of this save of kalam and light. Because the Alter Rebbe explains in other places that the transformation from spirituality to physicality cannot happen through the finite light, because you're dealing with an infinite gap, and therefore when one views the fact that this world was created something from nothing, it is an expression of the infinite light. But nonetheless, in our consciousness, what is the identity that is experienced, even the spiritual identity, even if you sensitize yourself spiritually, the divine energy that you can experience in your conscious is only that which we call mamale kalam, and that which is condensed from our perspective, allowing ourselves to experience ourselves in a limited fashion. So to summarize, every single thing possesses two realities. Its reality from the perspective of Hashem's knowledge or Hashem's energy, which is present in every crevice and detail of the reality. And thus, the entire world is an expression and a continuum of Hashem's infinite presence. And then, each reality assumes its identity from the post-Tzimtzum perspective, in which Hashem's infinite energy is concealed and not present within the consciousness of the reality. And thus the world is finite and limited and defined by its various characteristics and attributes.
Those are relative realities.
Pardon?
Those are relative realities.
And this concealment, which conceals Hashem's infinity, and thus allows ourselves to experience ourselves as separate from Him, is a true concealment. It's not just fiction. It's all an imagination. It's all an optical illusion. It's true. Hashem truly created this concealment to work for the world. He truly concealed His light. And as a result of this concealment, it produces a real world. However, from His own perspective, the perspective of His knowledge and His infinite energy, the pre-Tzimtzum perspective, the infinity permeates every space. In other words, there's no space that's devoid of this infinity. The Tzemach Tzedek, in his Derech Mitzvah Sech, in the mitzvah of Hamanas HaLakuz, the belief of Hashem, the mitzvah, he gives an interesting example for this. I'll put it in my own words, but the idea is taken from there. He says, you know, when you have a 1-year-old baby or a 2-year-old baby, the father or the mother get down to the floor and start making all these funny faces and speaking in very immature and baby-like ways to engage the child's imagination and to create a relationship with the child. So the Tzemach Tzedek says somebody will come into the room and we'll look at this mature CEO of a major organization, a multi-million dollar corporation. He looks like a weirdo. He's talking like a weirdo. What he's saying is senseless sentences. The words don't make any sense. There's no sequence. I say, this is who I'm dealing with. He should be institutionalized. Another identity. He assumes another identity that's not him. But Tzemach Tzedek says everybody understands that his identity wasn't transformed. He didn't become a one-year-old child. At the moment that he's behaving like a one-year-old child, he uses his mind and his heart, assume the personality of a one-year-old. At that very moment, there is still present the personality of the 40, 50, 60-year-old matured and experienced man. But from the child's point of view, what he sees is the personality of a one-year-old that he can relate to, that the child can appreciate, that the boy and girl can be entertained by. If the child will see him writing an instant message, employing sophisticated business terms, the child will not be entertained by it and not have a relationship with it. He condenses his energy and he assumes the properties of a one-year-old's mind, of a one-year-old's heart, of a one-year-old's habits of crawling and talking, ah, ba, ga, da, da. His energy assumes those properties, and for the child it's very real. So the Tzemach Tzedek, this is what happens. The tzimtzum occurs from our perception. And it's true from our perception. The infinite light assumes finite properties which tolerates our existence. But from Hashem's point of view himself, his essential energy is present everywhere. It hasn't been removed, it hasn't been eradicated, it hasn't been decimated. But the Tzemach Tzedek says there's one difference. He says, in the metaphor of the father, it's only in the imagination of the child. It's pure fiction. It's a game, it's a trick. He says, here it's true. The fact that Hashem presents himself as a one-year-old, he truly becomes a one-year-old. And the product that the one-year-old creates is a real product, a limited world. I don't mean he truly becomes a one-year-old. I mean the light truly assumes those properties of finiteness that allow the world to be as is. It's a true world. The world we live in is a true world within our own consciousness. But its truth is only vis-a-vis our reality, not vis-a-vis his own reality.
You take issue with people who say it's an illusion, but they're talking about from Hashem's perspective. From Hashem's perspective, ultimate reality, everything disappears into oneness.
But even when you say from Hashem's perspective, you have to explain what it means from Hashem's perspective. Because I told you last week, Hashem is the one who created the Tzimtzum. Right, that's what I mean. It's not a perspective. It's a reality. It's a reality. Now, we're dealing here with a paradox. But I want to tell you that this paradox is most probably the axis on which the universe of Chassidus Chabad evolves. The simultaneous somethingness and nothingness of the world. And the tension that this paradox creates for the Alter Rebbe was not only inevitable, but also necessary and even desirable. Because this indeed constitutes the purpose of creation to synthesize these two realities. That ultimately, within the individualistic identity of each creature and within our self-conscious personalities, the truth that there is he and there is none else beside he should be experienced. The Alter Rebbe once blessed his famous chassid, Reb Isaac Hameler, one of his greatest pupils, with a blessing for Arichas Yamim, for long days. I have to give an introduction. These two realities in the Alter Rebbe's literature are defined as Das Tachten and Das Elyon. Das Tachten is the lower perception, and Das Elyon is the higher perception. In the lower perception, we exist. In the higher perception, we are nothing. We're absorbed in Hashem's all-pervading reality. So the Alter Rebbe once blessed Rabbi Isaac Hameler with long life, Arichas Yamim. So Rabbi Isaac Hameler said, yes, Abba Sizal Zayin B'deya Tzlula. I should live long with a clear mind. In other words, what he's simply saying is, I don't want to be a 95-year-old senile man. That's what he asked for. It should be B'deya Tzlula. Deya is a mind. Tzlula means clear. Or really, Tzlula means transparent. Translucent. So the Alter Rebbe said, yeah, B'deya Tzlula. The Vesvos made B'deya Tzlula. As Das Elyon is la reinscheinen in Das Tacht.